Welcome to the Declarations of War podcast, everybody. Your host for this evening, myself, Alexei Card, Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
CSM representative Alia Ross.
Hey, guys.
And our newest co-host, Kingblade.
Hey, hey.
All right. First off, some shout-outs. So EVE Vegas happened. I met so many people there, way too many to list. So hi to everybody, including the big group of guys that gave me hugs over at the party. On the complete other side of the party, I somehow wandered my way over there. And Allie pointed me in the right direction to, like, a pocket of 12 Declarations of War fans all in the same spot. It was cool. I also want to thank Bam Stroker, who just took over PR for EVEBET, and he's now my sponsor manager, and he's a very cool dude. If you're in the Australian vicinity, like within a reasonable plane ride to any place in Australia, EVE Down Under is the event to go to. You want to be there. So check out EVE Down Under's website. It's very cool. And finally, a shout out to Jay McLean, who is a disabled veteran running a channel called The Best of Us. It's just no the, just channel, Best of Us. Three words. And it's a channel for other disabled vets, like a EVE social support group for them. So if you are one or you know someone that would fit that description, point them in that direction. I wish him the best of luck.
I want to give a shout out to everyone that went to that Kill a Nyx event for charity or whatever. If you were anything smaller than a battleship, I'm sorry that we killed you. And if you were in Spectre Fleet, try not being so mad on Reddit after the fact. It makes you look really stupid.
Shots fired.
I'm also giving a shout out to everyone who's at EVE Vegas. I met cool people and hung out with some familiar faces. Hey, Alex, how's it going? And met some new folks as well. I promised Snuggle Struggle I'd give them a shout out after hanging out with them for a while. But yeah, great event. Had a great time.
I want to give a shout out to an old time member of Noir, as well as all around great dude, fellow Marine, felon Jake Hell. I knew you couldn't leave Eve for good. He stepped away for a while, and the bug got him, and he's back.
Back, baby. It's good to have him back too. But this is how busy and like out of touch Allie is. We had the EVE Vegas thread on the Noir forums for like months. We had broadcasts going out. Hey, if you're coming to EVE Vegas, drop me a line. Allie says nothing this entire time. Get to EVE Vegas, and just all of a sudden it's like, oh, hello, you're here.
It's funny.
That's cool. Let's go to dinner and watch badly choreographed knights slap each other around.
It's funny because I was tweeting about it and all that stuff when I signed up for it, and then ended up doing a work trip right before it and all that. So it was especially busy the week before. Saw your broadcast and forgot to get back because it came when I was in the middle of something else. And but once I got there, it went great.
All right, and a big thank you to EVE Timecode, our sponsor. Met our sponsor, Diana. She runs EVE Timecode. Very cool. She takes a lot of time to go to all kinds of different EVE events. She was at EVE London. She was at FanFest. We both shared a first FanFest, and we met each other there and hung out with her and the guys from Planet Risk, old radio show / podcast that used to be around. It was just a blast. This time around, we also hung out. It's also a blast. Could not convince her to join the 5v5 PvP thing that was going on at EVE Vegas, but she did cheer us on from the sidelines, and we totally won. So thanks for that. Go to evetimecode.com, where your business counts. One Plex for every $250 is free. You get a free Plex. And they accept Bitcoins as well. So if you're sitting on a bunch of those, there you go. Good place to sell them. Well, absolutely support them and support her. Fantastic company, fantastic sponsor. Oh, so much has happened since we've been gone. Let's get into the poll results. While we were away, the long distance jump changes did get a bit of a change. And, well, not while we were away, but like just as we recorded. So we put up the poll. Do you feel that the revisions were what was needed? You know, do you feel like this was the answer? 65% say yes. Only just under 20% say it doesn't really change anything. And 16% say it kind of ruined the changes, now they don't go far enough. Personally, I was in the final category. Not all the changes, most of them I thought were fantastic, but the jump cap at 1 month, I felt kneecapped a lot of the impact of these. What about you guys?
I think the revised version is better than the initial version. I don't think capping it at a month... I mean, I can see... I don't think capping it at a month is going to make... is going to take it that far away from sort of the initial thing. It's... A month is a long, long, long time in EVE, and even though it'll let you, you know, move around sort of inside of a war, that's still a lot of fatigue.
So like there's a jump fatigue calculator out. There's actually a couple out now, but it gives you a really good sense of like how badly you can screw up your travel time if you don't wait for jumps and stuff. And so it's not really that it's capped at a month, it's about how quickly you actually hit that cap, and on your fifth jump without waiting you would hit that cap. It would take you 4 hours in total to make all those jumps only, I guess, quote unquote, but you would hit that month cap within five jumps. Your fifth jump would push you up to basically 30 days, which then makes it extremely difficult to like get away from, like almost impossible to get away from without just like stopping play.
King, what do you think here?
I have been against these changes from the get-go. I know I waffled in the last episode about a lot of things, but I just, as a person who uses his carrier as his taxi service to basically move himself from point A to point B and being a mercenary, I hate it. I hate everything about it. I like the fact that they're trying to force, they're trying to take, you know, they're trying to take the proliferation and the ease of use of supercaps. I just don't like the way that they're doing it. And I don't know of a better way to do it. I'm not a guy who does game balancing or development, so I'm not sure if there's what the better alternative is. I just dislike it. And I am in a majority. There's not a lot of people that do like it, but really, there's no one put any real solid or, you know, good alternatives up that actually make sense.
This makes a little more sense now. I mean, like, you just at this point, you kind of just have to accept like that this is what's going to happen. The time of like this is a bad idea is about 2 weeks, 3 weeks too late.
Oh, I know. I know it is, and the thing is of the evils, this is lesser of them. I just wish that there was a better option. I really do. I wish there was something on the table that maybe they discussed and tabled or decided not to go with that is a better option, but I just don't think it exists. I think they're trying to make this huge change. I mean, we know why they're trying to make this huge change, but I think that I feel like that there's something that we as a community and as CCP just aren't seeing as a better option.
I'm pretty happy with the concept. Like, it is extremely inconvenient for us as the mercs. Really would have loved to have seen an increase in the carrier ship maintenance bay capacity to compensate for this, since we move fitted ships, and that's pretty much it. But, you know, we'll adapt, or we'll find out that it's too costly or annoying to adapt, and then we'll figure something else out. But I think as far as health of the game, it's going to be way better. It's really reinvigorated a lot of the player base that hasn't been excited about the game in a very long time. People are pumped about being able to have lots of small and to medium-sized fights without, you know, having to hold back because they know that Goonswarm could be there in two or three Sinos, and they can do that timer after timer after timer. I think we're going to be going into a brave new world, and with the new release cycle, You know, in 3 or 4 months, who knows what other changes are going to come in that'll build off of this. I think a lot of people are pretty pumped about it, and I don't think they're entirely wrong. It's obviously going to, you know, require a lot of changes and adaptation. Some of them may not be adaptations that mercenaries can survive, to be quite frank, but at least if that's the case, we'll have something, you know, cool to do after our retirement, you know what I mean?
Well, I guess going back to it, that's what my concern is that, I mean, looking at this calculator, logistics from our side is going to be the ability for us to move contract to contract as we have in the past, being able to, you know, go, okay, well, we have a contract, you know, we have a 2-week or a 1-month contract in Pure Blind, and now all of a sudden that contract's up and they want us to move across the universe to, you know, to, I don't know, input random, you know, system, you know, 20 some odd light years away. We used to be able to pick up and, you know, 2 days later reinsert. We're not going to be able to do that anymore. It's just
bullshit. Yeah, it's just not going to be able to be done in the stretch of 2 hours. And that's actually honestly kind of acceptable, because for all the little hits that people like you guys are going to take, this is going to weed out a lot of bad shit that's going on in the Supercat meta right now, of being able to bounce halfway across the system. So,
Delator ran some numbers, and he was at eVegas. We were talking about the server burgers. He ran some numbers, and that, I mean, as long as we pair out like some of the battleships we are bringing, really limit the battleships and to a certain extent battle cruisers that people are bringing along. As long as we spread it out over 2 days or so, where people don't have to jump back to back because it's somewhat exponential. If they can ride out the fatigue timer.
50 minutes. That's all it is. It's literally wait 50 minutes between each jump and you will get there 3 hours quicker with no jump fatigue.
Yeah, so it's totally going to be possible with some slight changes on our part and just a lot of patience. We won't be able to turn around and do the 24-hour redeployment or the 48-hour redeployment that we used to be able to do. But it'll still be possible to do. Like, to make those moves, it'll be possible within, say, a weekend or something like that.
And depending on what ships we need when and where, there is also the possibility of going by gate to something that's just going to be a temporary engagement.
Well, if they realistically, like, if their end game is to let capitals in high sec, like, then all you really have to jump is, like, the low sec, null sec parts, because let's talk about risk reward of taking a fucking capital through high sec.
What would be the risk?
Zero, that's the point.
Yeah, exactly. Although I wouldn't see much advantage to it either, except to maybe cut down the number of signers you have to take. But, I mean, it's not going to help us move any faster. But anyway, I think it's a change we can survive. And their tug is coming out. Hopefully someday there will be a jump tug that could actually fill the role that our carriers are currently using. I would love that.
Again, I'd still like to see the teams, you know, maybe change the roles of one or two of the freighters, the jump freighters, to include to get rid of their cargo bay and put in a ship maintenance bay to allow it to be a main role ship mover for things like this, for logistics like this. I think with this kind of a change, I think changing the role of one of the jump freighters would be absolutely a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I mean, and Fozzie was talked to about it at Vegas. He pretty much said not something they're looking to do right now, but you never know, kind of thing.
Was there a wink?
I did not get reports of a wink or not a wink, so I couldn't comment. But hopefully it's something that the CSM is continually messaging to CCP, that this is a niche, small gang, small alliance role that needs to get filled. Because we can't do the 33 million M3 moves like we just did with the three or four carrier pilots that we have available. I mean, they're happy to put in the time now, but it's just physically not going to be possible to get that all done in one play session. Maybe not even two play sessions going forward. And we don't have the 30-something or 100-something carrier pilots to space all the moves out with. We got to do it with the same handful of people that are taking care of that kind of stuff. Those people need love, too. Speaking of Vegas, a lot went down. So Allie and I both went to eVegas. It was an awesome time. I don't know how much you guys out there want to hear, like, all the stuff we did versus the headline stuff. Most of the people out there, the Eve Media, Latanya.com, Crossing Zebras, etc., some of the podcasts have already covered, you know, that, like, what things are going to be released and that kind of stuff. So I don't know how much time you really want to spend on that. To me, the highlights are the T3 destroyers that are coming out. They're going to be fantastic. Basically, it's the same concept as the current T3 cruisers, but instead of having to dock and change subsystems, you're taking the ship out and you actually switch what role it's going to be in space. It's going to be either super fast, or it's going to tank really hard, or it's going to do lots of damage. And presumably it'll have drawbacks and strengths in each mode that are completely independent of whatever you fit on it. And no skill point loss, which is going to be cool. Allie, what was your biggest takeaway in terms of, like, stuff that's coming?
I mean, as always, I like... As always, it's a different experience as a CSM listening to CCP presentations. As the sort of like, yeah, we get to talk about that now. That's amazing. I liked Siegel's keynote, and I liked the focus on talking about some of the aims for NullSec and some of the aims for the ways in which the roadmap has been updated since, you know, since the presentation at FanFest, and sort of the ways in which CCP has delivered on the stuff that they're working on at FanFest, and the ways in which they've changed direction or are going now, particularly to sort of the working on SOV and NullSec, and this whole power projection change obviously is a big part of that.
I want to give a quick, speaking of CSM stuff, I want to give a quick shout out to Sugar Kyle, who did some, like, real-time CSMing, and it was brilliant. So, CCP Seagull hosted a roundtable, and, of course, the first couple questions she gets are like, well, can you tell us anything about destructible outposts? Can you tell us anything about this feature, this feature, this feature? And Seagull's, like, looking like, I can't really say anything, this is all done by my design teams, da-da-da. And so Sugar Kyle breaks in and he's like, okay, guys, well, here are the kinds of questions she can answer. So maybe we should all phrase our questions like that and aim for these broad things, because that's what she does. And then she turned to CCP Seagull and was like, maybe it'd be helpful if you gave the room an idea of sort of the organizational chart and what your areas are. And it was like, oh, that's the CSM process in like 15 seconds sitting around at a conference table of like 50 people or whatever it was, instead of in the back channel. But that's basically what it was. It was really cool to see that happening in real time.
And that's, I mean, I talked to Sugar about that a little bit afterwards, and that's something that we had, you know, we had that meeting with Siegel at the summit, and it was hugely helpful just to get that information about what CCP Siegel does, and of course the information about how, you know, CCP teams are arranged and all that. It's good to know when you're trying to talk to them and make sure that you're relevant.
I really like the roundtables in general. I mean, the presentations were cool on the main stage. The keynote was definitely awesome. But for me, a lot of the meat was in the roundtables. They were some extremely good discussions about game design, community management, and development, the sort of general game development philosophies that were going on. I got to give shout outs to CCP's Falcon, Manifest, Lilu, Gargant. They were all fantastic. Guard, of course, was in rare form. It was pretty epic. And I was so happy to see so many of the CCP staff there. That was really overwhelming to me. I expected maybe a couple. Like, I knew Fozzie was going to be there, and it was great to see him again. But it felt like it was a who's who of the CCP staff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I guess actually probably my favorite part of Vegas would be our victory in the PvP tournament.
Yes.
In sort of a 1v1 in the, not really a tournament, but 1v1 in the PvP room. It seems like a pretty trivial thing, but I'd been going through this funk of like, you know, I get in fights, I don't really get the shakes anymore, I just lose. You know, I haven't developed my skill as a pilot as much as I'd like to, and now I've just kind of gotten in a rut, and that fight was something.
That was pretty outstanding. It was 5 versus 5 pre-fit battle cruisers, Camel Empires pre-fit battle cruisers versus Nullies pre-fit battle cruisers. We, of course, picked Camel Empire, and we were vindicated. It was a pretty close fight, but we did win. And it was, yeah, like Ellie was saying, pretty shake-worthy. It was freaking awesome. It was really cool that Bam Stroker was sitting on the opposite side of the team. He, like, was their ringer. And we totally, totally took him on, took him down. That's what you get.
Yeah, it was a good fight. It was a good it was fun to fly with. I was flying a sort of tackle newt prophecy, got up on something, held it down, and stayed alive for probably longer than I should have.
I was FCing our side. I was in an Oracle, so I could call targets and watch ranges and stuff without having to do lots of module management. And we took out the enemy Oracle straight away, but they kept me alive for far too long, and I was just spitting out that damage. Now, of course, because I was pretty thin tanked, and it was a pretty short fight, I was overheating the gun straight away and everything. So I was spitting out crazy damage. Finally, somebody got on top of me and tackled me down, but I think it was maybe their second target or third target even. They really should have taken me down first.
Yeah, we took their Oracle down first, and it was a good thing that we did. Went down very quickly and took the damage off.
Yeah, that was because the end fight was pretty close. We wound up winning with 2 ships to spare, but one of those ships nearly died. The only reason it didn't was because of some excellent communication on our side. Again, NAR pilots communication, thumbs up, good job, guys. Oh yeah, it was an all-NAR team, plus one... like our ringer, I guess. Some random guy we met. It was really cool.
Yeah, everyone had ringers.
But it was like, oh yeah, I'm tackled, I'm going down. It's like, okay, well, I've tackled the guy back. Start pulling range. So like just before our, like what would have been our next to last ship died, got out of web scram range, pulled range out of damage range, stayed alive. Meanwhile, this final cyclone that we're working down is like almost out of booster charges, and he's sat on top of like a fully fresh ship that there's no way he's going to be able to kill in time. And that was like the end seconds of the fight. Epic. So, Allie, now that you've had that, do you think you're going to be playing more?
Yes. Yes, I will be, especially now that I know where I know where I'm supposed to, you know, put my ships, all that stuff.
Yeah, it'll be good to have you, especially the late night time zone. That's where it's at. We've been having a lot of fun. And we've got a bunch of Australians coming up. And like, if they log in a little early, it sort of ties into our West Coast US time zone. And it's a really solid crew. So if you're Australian or West Coast US, you want a good time, and you got some like really high level PvP skills, this is the place. We're having a blast. So yeah, that was great. Again, met so many people, a lot of more people than I thought I would see. Way too much happened to cover, but it's definitely something I will do again. I encourage all of you out there to please, if you're in the U.S., I would say U.S. or Canada, it's definitely the place to be. Charlie, you want to talk about the next event?
Yeah, sure. It was What was it for? Like Second Life or something, or Extra Life, or I don't remember what charity it was for, but it was like Bacchanalian or something running it. And I don't really know that much about it because I heard about it like 15 minutes before we left to actually go there. But so Waffles and PL, we both took a stroll out there. It was like, honestly, like the perfect size for one of these kind of events. So like a month ago, we had that Revenant event go down, and we slammed like over 5,000 people in the local, and it was awful. So we didn't even really break, I think, 1,200. Most of the times it was not even 1,100. So perfect size. The server can handle that, even with almost everybody on grid. The tie-dye was it wasn't tie-dye that, like, the tie-dye that actually just slows your commands rather than blatantly ignoring them. It was that kind of tie-dye. So we were still able to operate, and we had fun. We brought, like, a 40-man Eagle fleet, and for some reason Pandemic Legion brought fucking, like, a Harpy fleet or something. And they ended up getting worked over, so we sat in the, they put the super carriers in a medium faction warfare complex, which means that nothing bigger than a battle cruiser could get in there.
How did they get them in there?
It was, well, CCP was there. Like, they had, Karker was there, Logibro was there, or not Logibro, fuck, he's one of the security guys, I can't remember, but, there were probably three or four devs there sitting in Polaris frigates, just kind of hanging out. Scooting around, checking shit out. And so they transported them in there, which was awesome, because when RVB showed up with a 300-man battleship fleet that actually couldn't get into the event, we were like, all right. So we set up orbiting a wreck at the middle of the Plex for, like, maybe 90 minutes, just blapping anything that decided to warp in. And so we did that for about 90 minutes, and we were like, all right, this is kind of getting boring. We kind of fucked off, looked around in the system for some other stuff, and they ended up moving the super caps to a asteroid belt so everybody could go, at which point, like, RVB, Goon Swarm, and Spectre Fleet all blew up so they could go shoot the Nyx and shoot us. So we spent maybe the next hour, like, just taking warp-ins, killing one or two things, and, like, warping right out. And, we got probably close to 200 kills that day. So it was just like the halcyon event of super cap kills and low sec, perfect size. You know, we brought a perfect fleet comp for what they were doing. And it was a blast. I'd love to see more events like that. I'm kind of surprised not more people showed up. I wonder if people have a bad taste in their mouth or just didn't hear about it, or, like, was up
I think it's probably a combination, a little of both. I just literally just came back into show prep from doing Nightmare in New Eden, which, if you remember, last year was a pretty well attended event with a couple hundred people, and it was a pretty fun fight. But this time around, the local didn't even crack 200 any point, and easily half of that was one fleet. There was just nothing to do. Like, nobody came. Nobody, the people that did come came with, like, pretty low attendance. And, like, everybody on our fleet was all gung-ho to, like, have some kind of big grand engagement like we did last year, and it just didn't materialize. I don't know what to say about that, but I think the past couple public events have sort of soured people to them in general.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, though. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a great makeup for that Revenant event. Was just, so terrible. So terrible. We didn't even get on the Nyx kill. We had a couple of guys whore on it, but the bulk of us didn't even bother. Because by the time they actually got there, we had 300-man fleet trying to kill us. Which is why Spectre Fleet was pretty pissed off, apparently. Or whatever, butthurt. Go get some cream. So, yeah, money was raised, I guess, for charity. Whatever.
Always good. Well, there's a big fight in wormholes, as there usually is. This is like the latest in Titan Down kind of thing. And it's happened so often now, it's kind of eh. But I think this is a little impressive, just in the sheer amount of ISK that was destroyed. It was No Holes Barred versus Explosion and Laserhawks, and Hard Knocks Inc. was in there as well. I think that's most of the big guys on the opposing side. And, oh man, it was brutal. Noho was extremely outnumbered, but completely wiped the floor with the enemy fleet. We're talking multiple dread kills, maybe even dozens of T3 kills. A total 118 ships killed by Noho. You're not going to believe the ISK figure on this. 137.46. So, effectively, 137.5 bill, just gone. Plus skill points on top for all these T3s here.
60 T3s. Whew. Yeah, they played it well. Well, I don't know. So, like, the dudes apparently split up to bash multiple pauses, which was pretty fucking stupid. And then their subcap fleet was separated too, apparently, and so I guess No Holds dropped a bubble to catch the subclad fleet at like 110, 120 or something. And yeah, so they could just snipe off the dreads and then like waste the subcaps as they tried to get closer.
Yeah, apparently after the big fight, that was the end of any kind of invasion or anything like that that was going on. They just headed out, despite still having some things in the hole.
A Nestor was killed. A Nestor was used. That's practically a headline right there. I like these wormhole fights. I have a feeling it's going to be more of what the post-Phoebe looks like. Sort of a hybrid between this and the next event that Turtle was talking about. That's probably where things are going to settle out outside of the big 0-0 Sov brawls. Which probably won't happen until they change Sov. Or, well, yeah, I say that, but there's a chance it may happen, actually. Is that a little too pessimistic? I got told at EVE Vegas that the show's too bitter vet. So sorry.
But we're all bitter vets.
That's what I told him. I was like, the closest thing we have to a fresh new player is Allie. And the CSM has drained her of any kind of optimism.
I have some optimism, and then I get
she's just
that
a withered husk
right.
of her former self. I don't know. I think CSM she lost her newbie people. Street cred after she got elected again.
This is what the CSM does to you people. Don't run or do run. It's fun. Trust me.
Yes.
There's candy.
You should run. There's cake.
Erotical one for CMS.
Erotical.
CMS.
I still think we should get that as a shirt.
Fuck yeah.
So speaking of stuff going on in 0-0, Phoebe's hitting, and everybody is bracing for it. And probably the most surprising move, I definitely did not see this coming. Hero Coalition and the Pravi Bloc have signed a peace treaty. The war is over. I thought for sure they would keep going after Phoebe, just because all the third partying would sort of go down to a minimum. But apparently there's a Pandemic Legion deployment that they're concerned about. As we've been covering on the show, they've been facing significant Russian opposition from Stain. That's something they're concerned about, and I think with everything going on, they're just looking to take a breath and see how Phoebe shakes out.
Parades through 9UI, kissing in the streets of KBP. The war is over!
Oh, it's you know Pravi's relieved.
Yeah, it's also the case that with Phoebe coming, they're sitting on some pretty nice space. I mean, you've got M3 that wants to keep holding things that are sort of further into Nullsec from Ketch. You start looking at, alright, so where are people going to jump exactly? Where are they going to mid? How are people going to get around? And that space in Ketch and in Providence starts to look a lot better, despite being, you know, pretty terrible space, just objectively and in terms of moons. It connects to HiSec. It connects to LowSec. You can go somewhere from there. You don't have to deal with, it's not like midding in Curse or something where you have to deal with your station being camped and, you know, everyone being able to dock there. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's been some sort of moves in that direction, or some winds blowing in that direction. And I think it's kind of smart to, you know, because Hero Coalition, Providence, they've ultimately got a little bit more in common than they have to hate each other over. They're both relatively smaller. They're both, you know, not independently able to stand up to a Goon Swarm or a PL or an N3 or whatever. And they've certainly both done their time getting kicked around by those entities. So having a deal where they can, you know, especially for Pravi, where they can call on the Brave Blob instead of getting beaten up by it. That's got to put them in a happier place.
That's the smart move. Like, I wouldn't be half surprised if this was, like, Licton's idea, because he's a really smart guy and he's a really great diplomat. And this is a really smart move because the musical chairs of Phoebe is basically at its peak right now. And it's going to be going that way for a while. And you don't want to be caught out of place when Phoebe drops because you're never going to get back into place, especially for something as young as Hero. So, no, this was a super smart move to stop brawling out with Pravi because that was never going to end. Like, literally, it would end when Hero fell apart, basically. But that was it.
Yeah, and if they want to go back to brawling with Pravi, they can just eventually, at some point down the line, find a reason. You know, good fights that go bad. Or we've seen so many best friends forever peace treaty things signed, and then, you know, a year later, guess who's in the summer war? So it wouldn't surprise me to see this fall apart again at some point, but for now, I think it's going to be a good relationship.
Yeah, I see. It seems pretty clear to me that both on the Providence side and the Hero side, this is like an extremely utilitarian agreement. There's no big kumbaya moment. There's no coming together. They haven't completely buried the hatchet. It's like just they're both taking a step back, looking at the reality of the situation, and with Phoebe coming up, what all the other entities are doing, and going, okay, let's just put this on hold for now. Because, I mean, really, it was, for Hero, more than anything, it was just a target they could fight and beat. Something to conquer that would actually be doable for a coalition of their size and maturity level. Something to get their fleets integrated, to get their pilots experienced. It was close to them, so it was very convenient. But it's not something they have to do. There's no blood feud there. There's no critical objective in Providence they need to take, at least not right now. So they just don't have a lot of incentives. And Providence, pretty much the same. They were on the defense anyway. So, of course, why wouldn't they want it to stop as soon as possible?
Well, like, look around you. Anybody with any sort of sense is shifting for the changes, and nobody's involved in a war right now. Like, that's was raging as hard as Hero and Pravi was. Like, nobody's out there actively looking to grind Sov. Nobody's looking to take Providence, or, you know, in that kind of metaphor. Everybody, the next 3 months are going to be seeing how the dust settles around Phoebe, and anybody with any fucking sense is stopping anything they do that might prevent them staying on their feet once Phoebe drops.
I think an interesting thing with Phoebe is it does change the fight dynamic, but it still doesn't provide that reason to fight. So I think you're going to see a lot of increased activity in like on maybe the 00 borders, definitely in LoSec, but you're still not going to, I would be shocked if you see like a massive invasion type thing, because that honestly, Phoebe makes it harder to do that with the jump range changes. And there's no incentive to do it more than there is right now, aside from maybe, I guess, that they cut the effective hit points on structures, which is good to stopgap change. But even CCP admits it's a stopgap change. So I suspect you'll probably wait and see more of a holding off period, like Turtle said, seeing where the dust settles, waiting for whatever CCP's got coming down the pipe that's going to change the dynamic of sovereignty capture or incentives or something like that, and then people unload with both barrels.
Well, that's just it. I mean, like, this jump fatigue idea is really cool for preventing people from getting somewhere really quick, but it does absolutely nothing to stop the whole critical mass factor that makes capitals and super capitals so overwhelmingly powerful. Like, if anything, I think it pushes people more towards critical mass, because that's kind of how you would combat the fact that you can move dudes slower, or you have to move dudes slower, so just put more dudes in and it will kind of be less of an issue. So, I mean, they need to fix that at some point, because the critical mass game is not a game. It's just, it sucks.
Other big news. Pandemic Legion has reset N3's coalition.
Get wrecked.
Maybe. But the bigger news, I think, is that they've sold a lot of their Renner space to Legion of Xdeath.
Yeah.
It's kind of a huge deal.
Well, it's a huge deal, but I mean, I think it's what everybody's recognizing is going to happen, is rental empires just, they're not feasible anymore. You're not going to be able to to handle them in the way that groups like Pandemic Legion or Goon Swarm are handling Rental Empires, and actually being able to respond to attacks on those Rental Empires, it's not feasible. So getting out in front of the gun and actually selling it for something while it's worth something before people realize, oh, we don't actually have to buy it, we can just go take it, and they're probably not going to come all the way down here to, you know, deal with us. So fuck yeah, sell it, get rid of it, actually make some money for it, because it's going to be pretty fucking worthless after Phoebe.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's interesting in that it makes Legion of Exdeath, who's really taken a back seat in 00 politics for a long time, with that Rental Empire income, assuming they could hold it for whoever would take it. Although, since it's in the absolute back side of the drone regions, I'm not really sure who would.
Well, you're going to have to live
there. A pretty
there.
Significant jump in their income, which sort of makes them a player again. Probably on a Pravi level, maybe like somewhere just slightly below them.
I mean, renting will still work, right? But you got to live there. And then somewhere as shitty as the fucking drone regions are now, like, the rental income that you're going to get from that is going to have to offset the fact that you live in a crappy region where you can't really make money. As it stands now, I mean, that could change, who knows? But as it stands now, you're going to have to basically live wherever you are renting out, or relatively close enough to be able to respond to something. So, I mean, if they want to live there, that's awesome, but do you really want to live there?
That is the eternal question. Personally, I think no. If you have a strong industrial base, the drone region is still not a bad option for you, if you can self-sustain. Go ahead, King. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, I don't think it's... I don't know, with the jump changes, I think living in deep 00 is going to be tougher. I think it's going to be easier, but it's going to be tougher.
Oh, so that's
well, CCP's acknowledged the fact that, like, industry in NullSec isn't to a point where you can realistically self-sustain, so I think that's kind of promising, because they recognize that there's, I think, a lot that needs to be done. But once they get there, I mean, it's pretty feasible, especially for an alliance that does have something that's industrial-minded to support themselves, at which point, like, renting could become one of the more lucrative post-Phoebe things, but on a much, much, much smaller scale than you're seeing it now, like, because you're going to have to be able to realistically defend the space, which means getting there. So, I mean, if you are living in a region that you're renting the rest out, like, that's going to be a pretty solid source of income, easy for you to defend, which means that realistically the chances of it getting attacked are probably going to be pretty small. So, I mean, you might still see rental empires and stuff, but it's not going to be an empire. It's going to be like subletting your basement. I don't know. It's interesting. It's been a long time since I've seen a patch that has created this much pre-patch dynamic. Like in the meta and the community, and it's been a long time. Probably,
yeah, it has,
like,
been a while.
Apocrypha, maybe.
Or
maybe
I don't
Dominion.
Know.
Dominion, I guess, but I don't even think we realized what we were getting into there.
Well, the thing with Dominion is it dropped, but in terms of, like, pre-meta shift and planning, not really a lot was done. It mostly just formalized what was already going on. I guess it put in the supercap meta, but. Like, there was a brief period where there were capital systems and that kind of thing, which I guess changed things a bit, but not on this scale in terms of, like, redrawing the map before the patch even dropped. Like, that didn't happen.
I mean, that's all because the jump changes, right? You want to get all of your map drawing done and over with.
Mm-hmm. Related, the Russian coalition in Stain is apparently gaining some steam. I'm going to guess either... when Phoebe hits, or like just after Phoebe hits, or as soon as CCP puts out whatever the new sovereignty thing is going to be, or tweaks somehow the incentives for holding space, I think you're probably going to see the Russ make a pretty serious push to try to retake Ketch. Right now, it seems like they're just putting pressure on with fleets. They're not really doing any serious sov challenges with supercaps and stuff like that. But I think most people that are involved are agreeing that it is coming. It's just a matter of when. And that's going to be a front that erupts on Hero's Southern Front. In terms of other things that have happened with the upcoming patches, I don't know, Allie, if you want to take this, but there have been some changes to Invention, and missions. I think the only really thing I'm pumped about is that they're going to remove the skill queue. You're going to be able to train as many skills as you want, as long as you want. Like, you can put in enough skills to keep your character training till you're dead. Probably long after your death, for some of you.
Well, no, because you can't inject skills that you don't have the prereqs for.
Oh,
so.
That's true.
And also, I mean, they don't train when your account's unsubbed, so...
Yeah, but, I mean... Fuck. I sub a year at a time, so it's like... being able to set a year's worth of training. I mean, I guess that's assuming that, like, your training goals don't change, which I think is probably a more common thing for a lot of people, is that your training goals probably change every couple months or 3 months, or when you join a new group, you know, and they have different doctrines, or you kind of figure out what stuff is cool and what isn't cool and what you want to do. Like, your training, your queue is always changing. Like, your training goals are always changing. At first, I was like, this is kind of stupid. Like, are we really this desperate for subs that we're going to let people, like, train for a year at a time and not have to log in? But, I don't know.
I mean, it's a huge benefit to people who actually can't log in all for whatever reason for a couple of weeks at a time. You know, you got Xander on his oil rig, you've got people who get deployed, or, you know, even people who just go on vacation.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone kind of gets a friend to manage their skill queue for them or whatever. But
against
not...
the EULA.
Yeah, I know it's against the EULA. Not having to do that is I think, a good thing.
Yeah, and for me, this was something that got mentioned at eVegas, that it represents a shift in how CCP views things. Like, the whole skill queue concept of, like, having to have people keep logging in for the skill queue was really not... It's not driven by a technical decision. It's a business decision. They wanted to force people to keep engaging with the game. And a key thing that Siegel said that really struck home with me and gave me a lot of hope was that now they're focused on making you want to come play the game. Like, that's the strategy for retention, not giving you a thing that you constantly have to tick to keep getting something, but to actually make logging on and going to do something more aspirational. You want to come in and do something and play and get something done. You're not doing it just to have some kind of basic skill maintenance.
Yeah. That's pretty big.
That's huge. And very encouraging. So, if you want to talk about the invention changes, go for it.
I mean, not too much to say. I have actually never done invention. I will admit that.
They got rid of reverse engineering, which is pretty cool, I think, because that was kind of stupid.
Kingblade owns a T2 BPO.
I own several, actually.
Yeah, why don't you weigh in on this?
Well, apparently, the thing is apparently, from everything I'm reading, it's the exact same material costs, so I'm not seeing a big change in invention, especially with the removal of meta items from being able to affect the invention chance. It's still not making any big changes to Tech 2s and what the advantage of Tech 2 what a Tech 2 offers.
Well. Yeah, that's true, but what they are making big changes to is the distribution of skill requirements throughout invention and industry as a whole, which, honestly, were pretty fucked up. Like, the requirements for some stuff that you would think is basically, like, on the same level as some other stuff were just completely different. I mean, it was basically like a binary tree that was completely unbalanced. So,
I agree with that. I agree with that completely. With that statement. I agree with that statement completely.
Cool. Let's move on to contracts. So nobody cares about missions.
No, I mean, there's, you know, missions got a little bit better. I think they came out with some...
Do you still lock red crosses and press a button until they're gone?
Yeah.
Okay, we're good.
Yeah. Then
contract wrap up.
The decade's worth of obscurity through the process is having the veil lifted from it. So that's kind of cool for new players.
contract wrap up, we have just finished our extraction from the Outer Ring deployment. We moved out last night. It was a pretty interesting contract. Basically, we are in 4C-, which is the hub system in Outer Ring. All the pipes pass through it, basically three big pipes in that region. They all go through there. And it was a very high traffic area, but not a very high target area. We had a pretty big blue list, because the group that hired us in had us set all their friendlies, of course, which turned out to be quite a few people. There was some local opposition. They mostly did station games, which were really annoying and not very fun. But we did hurt them a bit. Apparently, as soon as we left, their logged in numbers doubled. So they were quite anxious to see us go. Generally speaking, though, probably not the most exciting contract. There were a couple engagements which were cool. We won on some roams which were cool. But as far as pipe camp contracts go, not the most trafficked. I think the last one that I super enjoyed was Deacon, which I believe Kingblade is old enough to remember.
Yes.
Deacon was a blast. This was no Deacon, but it was still relatively fun. We did very well. The employer was very happy, which is always a good thing. Ah. I just would have liked a little more action, perhaps.
Employer. As long as we're getting kills. Yeah, as long as we're getting kills, that's all that matters.
Indeedy. So, I'll give you the final numbers. These are slightly off because our kill board has not had the Phoebe update. Or not the Phoebe update, the Oceanus update, which changed some of the module names. So there are going to be quite a few kills that are not here that should be. Total Alliance killed was 403 for 29.6 bill in damage. I lost 73 ships, 9 bill in losses, efficiency 76.5. Noir specific, this is the one that's not going to count a bunch of the Phoebe. Like, they changed the names of the missile launchers and stuff, and it, therefore our kill board won't accept them. So we got 299 kills according to the contract on our kill board. That's probably going to go up after that patch gets put onto the board. So I have no idea how much exactly. Certainly over 300, probably quite a bit over 300. We participated in 25 bill plus in damage. Losses 36 for 3.66. NAR efficiency 87.2.
As per usual. Killed it.
Killed it. Nailed it. I was very happy with NAR's participation on this contract. We were, not only were our actual kill participation numbers pretty good, but in terms of the fleets, like, we were routinely making up most of the fleets, sometimes two or three times as much as other corps, which was cool. Always good to see. Alright, I want to give a thank out to EveBet. It's eve-bet.com, Newbedon's premier betting service. You can bet on real-life sports with ISK, as well as esports and EVE events, of course. They've handled trillions, hundreds of trillions worth of bets since opening, so they're a reliable service that you can trust. You can bet on the Alliance Tournament. If you were smart, you could have bet on the World Series. You could have been betting on blackjack. You could have been betting with their slot machines. All the event stuff that you can bet on, the odds are industry standard. So don't have to worry about any kind of favoritism or anything like that. And they're always adding new stuff you can bet on every week.
I can confirm that they have handled probably close to $20 billion of my own ISK.
What do you bet on when you usually go there? I'm curious.
Everything. Football during football season. American football. I do play roulette. Their online roulette occasionally. I do play blackjack. Bet a few billion on the Alliance tournament. Cough, cough. Eve, Alec cost me like $10 billion-esque, but cough, cough. You know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You sound more of a sucker than anything.
Yeah, you know. No, I bet on everything. I mean, it's enjoyable. It's EveBet has been one of my favorite spots to go. Everyone was big, you know, we're big into Blink, but I wasn't, you know, I prefer the traditional, you know, betting methods that the house always takes your money. I mean, you do okay.
right. Well, we can talk about your gambling addiction
later. Vegas. I did actually came out of Vegas gambling wise with more money than I went in with, which was cool.
Oh, nice. What'd you play?
I did not.
I didn't have tons of money because I didn't. I was currently jobless after having had a job for a while, so I had a bunch of money, but I didn't want to spend it all on gambling. So I was like, all right. I'm going to have the minimum buy-in for a poker table. That's what I really wanted to play, was poker. The minimum buy-in for, like, every casino is $100 for No Limit Hold'em. I was looking for something more in the $50 range, so I decided to play Limit Hold'em. I did $25 on Limit, walked away with $37, and then Terminus Calamity of Noir convinced me to play Blackjack, and it convinced me, or not... Not convincing, but he like coached me through a little bit and like gave me enough confidence to know what to bet with, what not to bet with, that kind of thing. And at one point, I took the $10 that I won off the... yeah, $10, a real high roller. I took the $10 I won off the poker thing, I put it in the blackjack table. And at one point, I was up to like 45, but then I lost it all the way down to 15. That's what I walked away with.
Literally so, The first time you say to yourself, I should probably walk, you should probably walk.
Yeah, I totally should have walked. But he kept fucking playing. So I was sitting there for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and I got bored. It's like, fine, I'll bet.
Did he teach you positive progression betting or negative progression betting?
Positive.
Okay, good.
I don't even know what those words mean.
I assume that means you bet more as you go.
That is why I lost money. I suck so bad at it.
Yeah, positive progression betting is when you, as you win, you keep increasing your bet, let's say from 1 unit to 2, then 2 to 4, 4 to 8, 8 to 16, 16 to 32, so on and so forth, until the point you lose. Once you lose, you've secured a, you know, up to a point. So let's say you go up to, let's say 5 wins, and then you collect all that money and walk away. And then you start your progression all over again. That's the way I bet. I do positive progression in series of 5. So 1 to 1, then 2 to 2, 4 to 4, 8 to 8, and 16 to 16. And then at five progressions, which is 32 at 32, I pull that all off. So I've made 64 units at whatever your betting unit is, whether it's $1, $10, $100. A lot of people, you know, tout negative progression, which I don't, which is as you lose, you increase the size of your bet to catch up.
Yeah, that seems like a very bad idea.
It is an incredibly bad idea, but some people get sucked into that. And that's the ones that have the gambling addiction. Gambling problem, we'll call it.
But no, I did all right. I walked away with 15. I was the only member. No, that's not true. Terminus walked away with actually quite a bit. He bet with 200, walked away with $50. So percentage wise, I did the best. Percentage wise,
that's fun. I do enjoy table games. See, Vegas would be probably cool for that.
Yeah, the one thing I wish they did, and there was some talk of it happening, but it never really materialized, was an EVE players only poker game, like an in-person EVE Online Hold'em. Poker tables of just EVE players, so we could all hang around and bullshit.